film about? What's it really about? What genre does it hit? What is really being said? What's really being seen? That's what you're talking about.
Hello there, and welcome back once again to the Intermission Podcast, a podcast about content, movies, TV shows, whatever catches our fancy. This week, we are back with a three-man panel. I'm Nitin Sundar, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend. Who are you today, Dodi?
Today, I am known as Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga, the boogeyman, has joined us for this episode of the Intermission. And we have a third leg as well. We have Mithun Sundar, who made a smashing debut on the Intermission podcast a few weeks back, where he went into the subliminal references of RRR, the famous song Natu Natu, and Peter App, which continues to enthral our listeners all around the world, whoever is listening to it. Welcome back to the podcast on popular demand. Mithun, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be on the podcast with the boogeyman Baba Yaga and the one and only Nitins.
Welcome.
Indeed. And if you have not already guessed it, this week we are going to be talking about the John Wick universe, specifically John Wick Chapter 4, a movie that we all watched recently and are quite taken in by. So our thoughts on John Wick Chapter 4 coming right now.
You're going to die.
Maybe not.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend.
A new day is dawning. New ideas, new rules, new management.
We've known each other since we were 9 or 10.
I don't sit at the table.
Your family does.
Please pray for me.
Now, Dodi, what are your thoughts?
I guess let's start first with Chapter 4. That's what's fresh on everybody's mind. And then we can get into a longer discussion about John Wick himself and the Wikiverse?
Yes.
Chapter 4. Well, first of all, it was a lot of fun, obviously. I think always great to see Keanu on screen. Always great to have him back. And while I overall enjoyed the movie and I enjoyed even the way it ended, spoilers will be coming later. There were times where I have started to feel a little bit of, how do I put this? Sameness or... Same is not the right word.
Did you just
but
say that
I'm
word?
Getting... Yes, but I am getting, I want to see newer and newer things, and they are showing me some new things, but there are also long stretches of the same gun violence, the same, like, you know, shooting this way, that way, and 10 people and one guy, and it's starts to get a little repetitive, but there are a few sequences and we can talk about them in detail. But so those bits I enjoyed a lot more, but certain things like the Scott Adkins, the fat suit, killer, right? I mean, it was fine. It's very good. It's great. But there's a point at which I feel like this could have been one of the earlier movies and I would not have been able to tell the difference.
Very interesting. Very interesting thought and immediate reaction to that, Dodi. I was, I think this was on either the Filmcast podcast or something I read somewhere. So Chad Stahelski, the director of the second, third and fourth chapters of John Wick, apparently had the opportunity to direct chapter 4 and chapter 5. So spoiler alert there is going to be a chapter 5, which for people who have watched chapter 4 and saw how it ended might be a little vexing, but indeed there is going to be a chapter 5. Chad apparently had the opportunity to direct 4 and 5 together in one, what do you call it, schedule, right? But he was very particular that he did not want to do that because one of his rules is that every John Wick movie needs to be significantly better and different from the previous movie. I have a counterpoint to your view over there. I do believe that every movie has escalated upwards in terms of what action, what the technology allows him to do at any point in time. And he's pushing the boundaries there. I agree that the entire movies obviously are not entirely different from what's already gone.
And
it is also difficult because he's building on top of pretty awesome work that's already been done. Yeah.
To be completely honest, this is like reverse digging. At this point, the execution level is so high that we expect many more new things. And that's where I'm coming from. If I had seen chapter 4 by itself, it's totally fine. It's just after having seen 1, 2, 3, 4 is also good. But what else is new here? You know, Keanu, of course, getting on an age, but still like holding against everybody else. I think that's cool to see. We are running out of true action heroes. maybe Chris Hemsworth is the only other one who's been doing longer takes, stunt type action sequences, if you look at Extraction and stuff like that. Otherwise, you have Tom Cruise at the other end at 60, which is where even Keanu Reeves is just maybe a couple of years away. I don't think he's turned 60 yet. To see him doing that at that age and to see him like holding his own against younger and crazier looking villains, I think that's always fun. And I'm glad that they also pull the story forward to some kind of conclusion. We'll have to talk about potential chapter 5, but at least chapter 4 reaches some kind of conclusion. And of course, no review of chapter 4 is complete without talking about Donnie Yen. I think he's been, for my money, he's been the best antagonist slash kind of
character.
Point
yeah.
character.
Yeah.
And all of his, even his fighting, there's a lot in that fighting which has, you know, it's not just him doing action, which we know he can do, but he plays that blind man role as a, there's acting even within the action that's happening, right? You can see him thinking and then moving. He's also not playing a person who's always been blind. He's playing a person who had sight, who has become blind. So with every move, you can see him thinking and then moving, and he's still faster than everyone else, even with that half second pause. And you can actually see it in every shot. There is this half second pause before he does the next thing. He searches for the sound, hits the next thing.
Yeah.
And even then, he's, of course, faster than everybody else. And I think he was a superb addition to the movie.
Yeah. What does he use? He uses burglar alarms. He uses echolocation.
Yeah.
All kinds of tools to find out what he needs to do next. But this is an audio podcast. So unfortunately, our listeners can't see, much like Donnie Yen. They can't see what's happening here. So when Dodi started off his initial review of the John Wick universe and John Wick 4 especially, and saying that it was not escalating enough for him, our co-panelist, Mithun Sundar, had a very, very interesting expression on his face. So I'm going to throw it to you, Mithun.
Yes.
No, thanks. So, Dodi, to what you just said, this your view about John Wick Chapter 4, I humbly and totally disagree.
Officially, you say it is...
Well, I just reject your hypotheses.
By the way, even after your hypothesis, you yourself rejected it like half the time when you came back about Donnie Yen and all that. So you yourself have done it. But I winced when you said, you know, the usual gun violence with people shooting back and forth and one guy versus 10 men. Like, I mean, this descriptor, this is the
first descriptor of the movie. That's
funny. Of the first chapter 4, this descriptor made me wince a little bit. I mean, there is a little more than that. So I'll tell you why I thought John Wick 4. So John Wick 4 in my head did a couple of things. It probably became, from a plot perspective, it went as close to one as possible. It clarified much more than 2 and 3. Yes. 2 and 3, they expanded. Wick actually, 4 actually brought it back. It was very clear right off the day. You go to Osaka, get that help. Kane will be the one person you will have to beat who actually follows your rules and hence is a good and equal antagonist for you to solve for. You have a total random, which is that nobody who's going to have to wait till pricing hits its level who will take you out, but until then will play the mercenary role. So the clarity of what the plot point was and where you will close, and you have to kill only one person. If you finish that killing, then your answer is solved. And so this, for me, first is from a plot perspective, it was clear. Second, given that they had actually done everything with the action before, they took the action 2 levels higher again. And that was, for me, the biggest part of it. They hark back to one thing, which is always when John Wick action is happening, the world is happening around it and nothing stops, right? And this one allowed that to happen in a very good way. That whole not a damn fight sequences, you know, the world continues. Nobody.
The radio show.
Unbelievable. The way it happens in the nightclub where people are still dancing, literally the dance is choreographed into the fight.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The world goes while Vickverse does what it does. This has taken that to a fine art almost. From a fighting sequence, I mean, every time he actually invents something new, right? While still having his old nunchucks were there for the first time. I mean, there was an entire new learning. The firearms that we use, again, a new escalation because the shotgun fire with that burst coming out was a new one. Apparently, it's an illegal firearm in some other countries.
On that note, not just the fact that they use that particular weapon, but there is the sequence where there is the aerial view of him going from one room to the other shooting people, which put me in mind of, obviously, what's the name of that? Fuck, I can't forget this. The Jesse Pinkman movie. What is the name of that movie?
Bullet Train. No, Bullet Car. No,
Fast Lord,
Car.
Jesse Pinkman.
El Camino.
Fast Car. El Camino. See, which I went from bullet train to bullet car to fast car. I was
El Camino. Camino. Okay, yeah. Which
but he talks about the
El Camino, right? And the aerial shot of Jesse Pinkman searching from one room to another, yeah, which was a beautiful artistic sequence. Now, imagine doing that with guns and stuntmen dying repeatedly, yeah, taking bullets and someone moving at, you know, 10 times the speed. I thought that was art. That was really high art for me.
Exactly. And so I wonder how Dodi still felt that there was nothing new in it. That's what confuses
me. That's not what I'm saying. Well, nothing new, but there's a lot of name. The same is what I was saying.
See, you do have to pay tribute to the fact that there are certain set of moves that he has to do, which he does. And he does them well, but he does them with variation. So you're able to see it with a new addition to it. You're seeing it in a new context. This is no longer Osaka. This is no longer New York. Now I stand for Osaka as a new context. There is, you know, a clear change in guard. So for me, this movie did a whole bunch of things while clarifying, simplifying, and allowing that story to get into one focused ending.
Yeah.
In that sense, I didn't actually know five was coming until I finished watching the movie. You guys watched a little later than I did. They announced the five much after, so that was interesting having seen what the ending was. I don't know what your rules are. You guys have one spoiler.
No, it's fine.
Cut off before and after. You can't say anything. No?
Okay, after this, we are going to have spoilers on this episode. So if you haven't yet watched John Wick 4, it doesn't really matter because this movie is not really about the ending. So please stick on with the podcast and you might probably appreciate the movie more if you go back and watch it later. But yeah, spoiler alert there.
That was it. So for me, I totally rejected this hypothesis, I gave you a few reasons for why. And hence, I liked it. And I felt even from an action perspective, having done horses, bikes, this, that, other than deeply going underwater, which is one piece that he hasn't yet done, like or going generally overly flying. These two pieces he has not done, but in terrestrial combat, all three levels, right? Like starting from like really far away sniper to like gun to the in between where you're sort of going gun-fu, which is in and out, to the very close combat, very places. All of those he actually escalated to new and different while giving halfbacks to what he's done in the past. In this one, at least that was my feel. I felt it deeply satisfying. As you guys know, I watched the movie twice back to back. It was that good in my view.
I watched 1, 2, and 3. In sequence before going in for 4, and it was a fantastic experience. Saw it on a big screen as well. I would love to watch it one more time.
When you watch it back to back, also you can raise your heart rate correctly because you literally know which second it is, right? So you can raise your heart rate exactly to match the movie, along with the music also correctly reaching what you need to do. You know, when he takes that sip of tea up on the terrace, he went all the way up to the terrace to take just that one sip. You know? So when he takes that sip, you know the fight is coming right after when he's talking to the daughter. So you can correctly plan for that sip to be finished and then go.
Yeah, that's true. I was the black sheep
of the family. Man has to look his best when it's time to get married. Or buried.
I'm going to need a gun.
Under the old laws, only one can survive. Failure to meet at sunrise. It's hard to die.
What about you, Nitin?
I was thoroughly blown by the film and by the overall experience, right? And I think you guys have spoken quite a bit about the new stuff that we got to see in John Wick 4. So the one thing that we probably didn't cover in that much detail is the final sequence, the ascension to the Sacre Coeur, the 222 steps, which John Wick does twice, not once.
Yes.
And the shootout that follows after that, which was one of the most beautiful scenes that I've seen in recent time. I don't know how much of that was natural light, how much of that was, you know, set design, whatever. If it was just a set, I don't know, but it looked quite fantastic. And it was a perfect way to end the movie because you'd escalated and escalated. You'd seen everything that you probably could have been thrown at you had already been thrown at you by the time it gets to the top, gets to the church. And then there's just this wonderful moment between Keanu and Donnie Yen, which I think is a great way to end the film. And it ends on a bit of a technicality as well, which stays true to the movie and its overall premise and the rules that are laid out, which, let me say, are quite silly. And I think that's part of the game, right? I think the fact that these rules sound silly to real world people and are taken so seriously by a bunch of people operating parallel to the real world, which is all these assassins and everyone's the high table. Every time they say you need to do something under the table, I used to, you know, laugh. Like, okay, what exactly does he mean? Is he going to slip a few coins under the table or what? Yeah.
Two ads. One is I have to react to this fact that you call the rules silly, but I will get to that later.
It really depends on which side of the world you are. You're probably on the other side of the universe.
Actually, think about it. In your real life, what is it that now unnecessarily this is going meta too quickly, but not required. in your real life, and we both read a book recently by Avatar also. So what are you actually balancing out? You're balancing out what you owe and what you're owed. Now, very clearly in this, if you were to see what they're saying, he's saying no business on continental grounds, which sets a parameter on what you, that sets boundary conditions. Second is always respect your marker, which is exactly the same theory. And it applies complete life. So it's not in the other universe. It's in this universe. It is not
as, city rules. As the great Winston said, why do we have rules?
Rules. Exactly. Rules. Without them, we live with the animals.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, wait. I had one other addition. Okay, so, Dodi, you said why is 4 better? One of the things for me was you guys spoke about Donnie and the King being a good antagonist. If you actually go back in all of the Wicks, there are few of the fighters who actually are antagonist matchable to John Wick, where you actually feel at least that light tension that he's not going to win the fight. Like in most of the cases, he is going to win the fight.
Yeah.
If you actually, in this, technically there are two. Even Killa was actually a very solid fighter. Like, although with it was a little garish because it was made up, the costume, the fat suit, all of that was there.
I, by the way, didn't mind that at all because...
I didn't mind it.
Until he started fighting, I didn't realize that he's a fighter, right? So it comes as a superb surprise when he suddenly starts making those moves and he's indefatigable, right? And also
So it adds to the fight when he's in that size. But for me, there are two who actually were relatively matchable. Before that, if you actually went back, there was Cassian in that one fight in the subway where technically Wick almost lost, Wick came.
And that's a long fight also.
Correct. It starts in the street. He actually loses.
Yeah.
He actually loses to Cassian, and then he manages to hold it together and give the professional courtesy in the subway. Yeah. If you go back in the three, there's Cassian. There was that woman who he fought with in the first one in the hotel room. Almost lost, but managed to. And won because of the support, because he got a gunshot. Yeah.
William Dafoe, Marcus.
Yeah.
The gunshot won him ahead. Otherwise, he may have lost the fight. So there are very few who in one movie they gave you two.
Yeah,
for me that was also a big reason why this one lifted. No. If you're talking fights, maybe there are two people who can beat him up.
Yeah,
compared to any other movie where you get half, in a sense.
That way, Donnie Yen was a great addition. I want to talk about two things as you. One was the tracker guy, the guy with the dog who's waiting. I felt like that could have been stronger. Like I got most excited about him at the point where he says, "This is not expensive enough, so I'm not going to kill you yet." But I would have liked that to be like an ongoing thing. It happened only in one scene and I had to like pull meaning out of the rest of it. But I would like that to have been, he keeps coming and saving John. You know, I'm keeping it for my purposes.
I got what you said, but I think they also very deliberately didn't want it to become about him saving John purely for that. See, that also takes a little away from John. That first one where he was saved, you don't want John to be saved also much. Yeah. Right? So in a sense, also for me is a link of why that thing goes from Wickverse to Regularverse. Like this guy is in the regular universe. That's why he's actually waiting for the highest bidder.
Yeah.
In a long shot. He's actually, he's regular universe playing with this. Eventually, that's what, I mean, all of them, that's the collision between the two. Yeah.
Right. I guess there's a way to do that where it's not John getting saved.
Hmm.
This guy doesn't know how great John is in theory. Because, I mean, he thinks he can, well, everybody thinks they can kill John Wick, which is why we have all of this. Otherwise, Janta would have just chilled off. But maybe it's him every now and then saving and a John who doesn't need to be saved. In this instance, he's like, oh, it looks like someone's going to kill him. Let me just get that guy out. It could have been more than once and it could have been a bit more funny where he comes in and he then refuses to kill and he says, not yet. He looks at his phone and he says, oh, not yet, whatever. I would have liked that to be a bit more, we could have had more. And I also dislike him getting stabbed in the hand by our, what was our guy's name? Maki, whatever. He gets stabbed almost like any other sidey idiots could have been some, and he's supposed to be better than that. So I don't know how we could have shown the moment there. I don't have a solution for it.
Before, so what actually happens with the guy finally? Is it that, does he develop a soft corner for Keanu because he saved his dog or something of that?
In the end, he says, save my dog, you're a good guy, whatever. So
it's a full circle. No, the dog saving is what?
The dog.
Oh, you did that. Okay, fine.
Yes. So save this thing. So that was fine.
And he was stunned because, see, technically for the highest bidder, like the guy who's lived his life on that rule, he's like, oh my God, there was a moral point over here where he actually saved the dog because he had to make that shift to save it, right?
Yeah.
So he's
stunned.
He's not just like, thankfully, he's actually completely flummoxed. And then he says, okay, oh, hence John Wick is actually above the table, not just under.
The
second thing I wanted to talk about, because Niti brought it up also, the Cyclocross step sequence, I think highlight of the movie. For me, because it had action, it had comedy, And it brought you back to what they've been trying to do in all the movies also that you see there. And you'll see a lot of the action guys keep bringing in this comedy element as well. Like Jackie Chan has a lot of comedy. And all of this goes back to Buster Keaton. And in fact, Chad Stahelski, in each of the movies, there's sometimes you'll see a movie projecting on a wall, see a chapter two starts like that. That's a Buster Keaton movie. These are all...
Oh, that's a Buster Keaton. Yeah.
In the third one also, he comes out into Times Square and Buster Keaton faces.
Yes.
He comes on that train and comes straight in. That's a famous shot from, I think, The General. I'm not sure.
By the way, some of those Buster Keaton scenes, you probably don't recognize Buster Keaton, but you see the scene and you know it's a Buster Keaton scene because nobody else was doing those stunts back then.
And they were doing it back then. Like, imagine the level of craziness. And even today, you have to do that. You have to, like, go through so much. He's the one... This guy standing in front, the house collapses. He's
the entire house
standing
collapses,
and the entire house collapses, and he's the window just goes through his body, and house collapses flat and on him.
I think, but I actually have not seen Buster Keaton movies.
Nobody has, but these scenes keep making the rounds.
Oh, I didn't even know this context. That,
okay. But even for Jackie Chan, Buster Keaton is a huge inspiration, and he's been an inspiration for everyone. And Buster Keaton's primarily a comedian who's a stuntman. So, I mean, it's whatever, primarily a stuntman who does comedy, but whatever his. His thing is not so much action, but it is how to fuse comedy and stunt work. And after the first movie, there have been funny moments in the rest, but I think after the first, it's for me in this one where it was so obviously comedy. Like he falls once, twice. First you feel bad, then you realize, first you feel bad that he's losing a few steps with so much difficulty. Then he keeps falling, 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 and then it becomes comedy, and then he falls, it falls, it falls all the way to the bottom. And that happens twice, right?
He falls through twice. So, on that note, on the Saklikor scene, it was apparently shot over 7 nights and a set of about 25 stuntmen were used who all keep dying, by the way.
About 25. It looked like 25 million.
So the same people die multiple times because there are only so many people who can do that sequence. So Keanu himself went up the steps, by the way, shooting a couple of times. So, and Keanu obviously did a lot of the stunts. He didn't do a lot of the stunts also, but this one was one of them that he did, and he was going up with a gun. So this is Chad Stahelski talking about shooting that, right? The look that John Wick gives you when he looks at his watch and actually looks up at the staircase the second time, I think that's maybe 50% John Wick and 50% Keanu Reeves going, Stahelski did it to me again. You got to suffer. That's what's fun about John Wick. He suffers and he keeps going. So,
good quote.
On that note, after that sequence was done, and Keanu Reeves is famous for gifting his stuntmen a lot of expensive baubles, right? This started all the way back, I think, in Matrix. He gifted his stuntmen BMWs or something of that sort. So in this one, after the Saklikor stunt was done, he gave all the stuntmen T-shirts, okay? But T-shirts which had the number of times they died in the movie emblazoned on them. So everyone had a different number, 20, 25, 30, etc. But I have a question on this note for you. Do you know what connects Keanu Reeves and John Wick 4 to Vikram?
Keanu and John Wick 4.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mithu, you only have to go.
Wait, this is very troubling. I'm unsure. But I'm thinking. I mean,
well, the obvious one, of course, Kamal Hassan was also inspired by Buster Keaton, but leaving that aside.
No, I don't have a clear answer. Yeah. They're both equally good fighters. But I don't have a clear answer.
As we all know.
In fact, Beam Boy was one of the stuntmen. No, so the T-shirts are not the only gift Reeves bestowed to his John Wick Chapter 4 stunt team. People magazine reported that Reeves marked the end of the production on the film by gifting the four-man stunt team personalized Rolex Submariner watches as a thank you. So that, by the way, is what Kamal Hassan gifted Surya for his important role as Rolex in Vikram. Rolex, sir! Yes.
Wow.
Nice. As always, Kamal Hassan continues to inspire Hollywood,
correct,
as you can see. So just wanted to slip that in there.
Well done. Just to finish, so they go up the Saklikor and you were talking about how the top scene, the way it's lit and all that, completely a set. I mean, it's a beautiful location.
It's a beautiful set,
What hit me in that scene, irritatingly, you spoke about lighting specifically, it's nicely done, but it's also really badly done because when they're facing each other, both of them have the sun on their left.
Ah.
And I'm like, you're doing this fakely, do it right? I mean,
well done.
Only in the long shot. But if you see the close-ups on the face, the sun is on one side, on the same side for both of them. Like, come on, you're spending this
that
much
seems,
money.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a very egregious mistake. So that irritates me. Like, come on, do this right.
So, since you guys have followed this thing and you probably read up and all that, right? Is this caught as a blooper or is there, or has someone like flipped it to actually have a meaning? I'm asking. You never know. Yeah. Somebody would actually, within, you know, the sun always comes when John Wick is there, it will only come up. Something will be there. Because you never know. I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know. I caught it in the viewing while watching it only because they call it out in some sense because what's his name? Winston actually goes to John Wick and says, look at that beautiful sunrise. Yeah, so they clearly point out the sun is back and to the left.
To his left. Yeah.
And in the long shots where you see both of them, it's fine. But when they do close-ups of Donnie, the sun is on his left.
As in on his left.
Should have been on his right, but it is on his left. It's on the opposite side.
But there are a lot of mirrors in John Wick. Just anyway. Reaching a different point.
No, anyway, small thing only, it doesn't matter. It's funny sometimes to see these things where you've taken this much care. It's like a 2-minute thing to have fixed another. And I don't know who.
What must have been an oversight, if it was.
The movie's theory of doing stuff with that much detail is, you know, I will do the detail for the sake of the detail. So actually, it's a blooper that they would never do, right? Because the movie does a lot of detail for the sake of the detail, which is actually totally irrelevant. Like, In John Wick 3, he puts that gun together. He takes 5 minutes to put it together before the knife fight scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then he fires one bullet from it. one bullet he fires. That heightening of that, which is so much detailing of putting that together before he fires one bullet. He may as well.
Which is also, by the way, which is part of the thing, right? You know that very often he's stopping there to load up a gun. And you know he's probably loading, I don't know how many rounds these guns have. 5, 6, something. And there are 75 people running towards him. So you know that this is already insufficient. He takes so much time to load them. The guys are approaching. He starts shooting and he's out of 5 bullets or 6 bullets in the next 5 seconds. You know that, and he's probably killed one person, right? Yeah. Okay, what the hell was that? He took all this time loading up that gun. What is he going to do for the rest of the fight? But then he starts picking up guns.
That's a healthy tension of gun food, no? Because picking you up have to now, you are finished and reload as you fight, reload.
Yes.
His style of reloading has become a thing.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, as an actor, to get reloading right is a major deal. I think that is, as trainings go, nobody does that very well.
Yeah. Right, he was the star of Matrix Reloaded, as we all know.
Sutthu revolutions, Manrupa.
the only actor known for his gun loading before this, of course, was Arnold Schwarzenegger from Terminator 2. And we should talk about that arc as well. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Wait, Great. Terminator is the best movie of the John Wick series?
No.
Are you making a case for?
Let's talk a little bit about the Wick universe itself. Yeah. I have a couple of maybe games. Anybody wants to the closest 100, how many people has John Wick killed on screen in the universe? On screen, not pre-first movie.
Obviously.
400.
Niti?
Seems less.
Mithun says 400?
512.
Okay. Mithun's closer. 439.
Ah, very close.
See, they would have gotten on per movie average, they'll have like that. So they're keeping on cleaning it at that number.
And for each movie, do you have a sense of, is it escalating, is it going up, down, anything? Now that we watch all the movies again,
Definitely, part one definitely had the fewest kills, I feel. Chapter one, I think, had the fewest kills. Yeah.
One is the fewest?
I think it's escalating.
I think
maybe 4 reduced, possibly.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I feel.
4 possibly reduced.
I think it's 1, 3, 2, 4.
Okay.
No, 2 is a lot of killing, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. So 1.
So 1 is the lowest. 1, 3.
And then 1, 4.
Actually, sorry. 1, 4, 2, 3.
2, 3.
Okay.
1, 4, 2, 3 is what I'll go for.
Okay. No, the highest is in 4. So it's 1, 3, 2, 4. Anyway,
what I said first. Okay.
Anyway, okay.
No, that's because you got confused with the number of the same stuntmen coming back and back.
Do we count them?
By the way, I watched Wick 4 a while back, right? So I recently just, in the last 2 days, did one quick fast forward viewing just to like see what. And I recognized one of the killers. You remember the guy with the Murukumisa in one in the bathhouse scene?
Oh, he comes back.
Because he actually takes a while to die in the scene where he's the bathroom, and he's got this mustache handlebar, which actually is quite a scene. And he's also accompanied by Kirin, who's one of the in my head, those four or five of them who can actually match up to John Wick. In one, there is one guy, one of the bodyguards is a good guy. He's called Kirin or Kirill.
The guy who runs the club security, no?
The guy who runs the club security. So the guy was, but his one
is,
down.
Yeah, you didn't recognize Kirill. Kirill
no,
is,
no. Kirill
Larry.
Kirill is Barry. Okay, fine. Oh,
yeah. Kirill, yeah. Kirill is Kirill. Daniel Bernhardt. Daniel Bernhardt.
Kirill is who? Wait. Who's it? Kirill is who?
Daniel Bernhardt, right? The guy who comes in Matrix as well. He's one of the agents.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one of the agents.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He was one of the agents.
And in Barry, he's in that episode, which is all a fight scene. The father.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He's the father.
One down from,
but he has a Murkumi, sir.
No.
He doesn't. Ah, exactly.
One down from one in one comes later in four. Which I just recognized for the last year. And he's again coming with the same mustache. I was like, at least that could have changed.
Sorry, just because we spoke a little bit about Barry, even did anybody recognize that the Red Circle, which is the club, the one of the secondhand people, I think Vigo's not that lawyer idiot who is, or whatever, that fixer idiot who's with him, comedian. But one of those guys is is the Barry Escobar, not Escobar. What's his name? Cristobal.
Cristobal
is there, one. The guy who's like guiding people everywhere. You go here, you go there. As a serious side.
Awesome.
Amazing. So since we are on this entire arc piece, right? So Daniel Bernhardt is a very, very important person in this entire universe, right? I want to talk a little bit about Daniel Bernhardt, if that's okay. Not that I know much about him, but whatever comes to my mind. So when we all watch Matrix and Matrix Reloaded specifically, and the long chase sequence, right, which is where he gets a significant amount of screen time. So he's one of the two agents. Yeah, he's the bike chase and everything.
Yeah, the bike, car, highway chase. Yeah.
So he's the guy who's standing on the truck. I think he inserts a sword. He stands on the sword. He jumps down. He does stuff. I remember when I saw that film the first time that this guy looks a lot like Matthew Hayden, the cricketer. How Matthew Hayden used to look back then. And in my mind, I was like, hey, Matthew Hayden is back. When every time I rewatch Matrix Reloaded, it was a thing in my mind.
Complete blank stares from both Mithun and me. Or Matthew Hayden. If you had said any other name also, we'd be fine. If you had said
Matthew McFadden.
Sorry, go ahead.
On that note, Matthew McFadden actually resembles someone else. Graham Thorpe, the English cricketer, as well. Matthew McFadden is, you know who Matthew McFadden is, right, Mithun? Tom Wamsgans.
Yeah, I know that character. Yes, that I guess.
Later,
He's
not in anything. He's just in the list of people who look like cricketers in my mind. Yeah.
What did he swallow again? Let's go.
Ortolan. But I actually didn't get your joke. What did he swallow again?
The closed circuit when they do that Prague thing. He gets a blowjob.
I mean, it's
from
not
somebody.
Funny. If you do swallow your cum, it's not really a joke. Yeah.
Oh, that.
But they all laugh at him because he kisses him back.
I don't remember this joke.
But he went straight to Ortolan. Well,
I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy.
So Tom Wamsgans is a swallower. That's the clarity.
Coming back from Matthew McFadden to Matthew Hayden to Daniel Reinhardt, which is where we are.
Bernhardt. So,
Bernhardt, sorry. Who's Daniel Reinhardt? Okay, to Daniel Bernhardt. Yeah. So in the Matrix, obviously, he's really buff in that scene, right? And there must be good amount of lighting, camera work, obviously wearing well-fitted suits and all of that. But what I really wanted to talk about was also this journey, right? So he shows up again in John Wick Part 1 and he's there in Atomic Blonde as well. He's there, as he said, in Barry, in one of the most outstanding episodes of Barry ever, as almost nothing in common with any of the other episodes of Barry. So we'd recommend that. Do you remember the episode number, Dodi? We could leave it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Season 3, latter half. Yeah, which is a chase and a stunt episode. Anyway, so what I really wanted to talk about was how this entire journey, and this is something that Chad Sahelski specifically credits the Wachowskis for, is how they have completely altered the face of action cinema. And it all started with The Matrix, right? So you have a pre-Matrix era where an action movie was really known for the one big solid punch, which is what a Die Hard or a Terminator was really known for, right? Like really buff guys who would come and beat up people, or there would be long gunshots and all of that. But you never had hand-to-hand combat. You never had like martial arts coming into Hollywood in a big way until Matrix brought it, right? And there was obviously the Kung Fu movies, the Hong Kong movies and all of that. But mainstream Hollywood really didn't have that. To where we are now, where even movies like you know, the Avengers, for instance, or any action movie that's coming out now has a set piece where they're really putting the protagonist right at the center in the hand-to-hand combat. The Black Widow escaping, you know, for instance, in Avengers 1, right, where she's tied up and she does that thing to get out of the chair and all that, as an example. Every movie has, you know, those sequences now, which really become scenes that you can talk about. And that's, and if you go back and look at Die Hard and you look at Terminator, which are great movies, and you look at everything that's followed since after The Matrix, you can really see that. You can see that change. And Chad Stahelski, of course, started off his career with The Matrix, where he was asked to come and join the set. And he was one of the stuntmen, as was David Leitch, right? And it all started over there. So arguably, John Wick is the biggest action movie franchise that Keanu Reeves has been a part of. And that's saying something. Yeah, but most people would probably say that, yes, it is true that John Wick has probably gone further purely on the action side of things.
John Wick launched him, right? David Leitch, I mean, from a stuntman to becoming a movie director, was it John Wick which made the thing for Chad?
Leitch. For Chad, yes.
I mean, he made the shift because it was supposed to be a small movie and then it became a major movie.
Yeah. Leitch also has moved. They were both moved with this. Vic has brought them into prominence and has what has brought stuntmen into making movies, which is why on the other side, Extraction is also a stuntman, Ronnie Hawk.
Is
also a stuntman guy who's making movies now. The guys who run the stuntman, filmmaker might be too far away, but they are storytellers because there are times when they, like the director, they say, this is the rough thing of the scene. And then you set up and you do the movement and you tell us where, which is the best camera angle to be able to see the movement of this person from this side to that side. So they are almost assistant directors for that.
Enhance the story with the stunt also.
So they are
mainly
almost
with the stunt, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're also effectively like second assistant filmmakers for those sequences.
In stunt movies, exactly.
In stunt movies or even in regular movies for a full fight scene, choreographer or director is really doing a lot more of filmmaking and storytelling than just pointing at stuntmen and saying, you go to this, you go to that.
Absolutely. That's exactly what Chad Stahelski talks about, right? Because the stunt sequence storyboarding and execution is what I would say even these movies really stand on top of, because really is what sells the movie eventually, right? And it's a sea change from what it used to be earlier, where there was a stuntman who would say, hey, come, this is what we need to do. You jump from here, you do this, what about roundhouse kick and you go, right? So the specialization that came into it. So by the way, do you remember, do you guys know the first sequence where Chad Stahelski was a part of something that we saw? It was obviously in The Matrix, but you know which scene or which sequence in Matrix? This isn't the first one in the movie, but the first one that he was a part of in whatever sequence they shot.
It's not when Trinity runs on the wall and does tick, 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 tick.
No.
I mean, right
off the movie. It's not the first scene.
Because that's when the world set up. So
Subway fight?
It is the sequence in the middle of the first part of Matrix where they're entering the building, the vault with all the guns and they do those somersaults and all of that.
Yes,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the one. And And this is what Chad Stahelski has to say about it. Okay, I remember my first time on camera, it was the government lobby scene where Carrie Ann does her wallop. We had rehearsed it a million times. We had squibs that had to go off, which by the way is the first time I'm seeing the word squib without the word damp coming before it, whatever that is. So there are squibs which go off. It was all practical.
Squibs are your blood things that burst.
Yeah, exactly. I thought they were condoms, by the way. But anyway.
Could be.
It was all practical effects, so you couldn't have a cell phone within a 300 feet range of the stage because at the time, the frequency of cell phones would set off these electronic squibs. They had over 1,000 squibs and they're blowing off and we're seeing them and just going, oh my God. I had to do this thing where I did a cartwheel over to an M16 rifle, pick it up with one hand, and then Keanu shoots and goes into the fight or whatever. I remember the setup was a day turnover, so you get one take and it takes a day to reset and then you do a second take. I had barely met anybody on set at this point. I'm in the getup and I'm getting ready to go. And I remember producer Joel Silver walking over to me. I never met the man before in my life. Looking me right in the eye and saying, don't fuck this up. Basically, don't miss. And he gave me that little stare. He's a very intense person. And I was like, okay, don't miss gun. They said there'd be a lot of debris. So I just practiced doing the flip with my eyes closed. And I swear to you, as soon as they yelled action, the first quib went off and I couldn't see shit. I just threw myself in there, magically found the gun and grabbed it. I was only 25 and I was like, don't miss gun. Don't miss gun. Don't miss gun.
Because action movies, the reset also comes, you know? Once you've like, exploded everything, you have to clean everything up before you start the shot again.
Yeah.
So especially if you destroyed something, you have to rebuild it or whatever. So you have to be very careful about the number of things.
One of the things I picked up, and this is a little bit of reading after, is while these two guys were stuntmen who became this, apparently in this movie, there's yet another guy called John Eusebio, who's actually their stunt coordinator for the John Wick series. This guy, and you know, we're trying to figure out what are the fight types that they used. This guy trained under some fellow, again, I don't know all of this thing, but trained under a guy called Insanto, who trained under Bruce Lee. So the line is straight from there to there as to, and so apparently among the fight styles that you see in this is something called Jeet Kune Do. I actually don't know how to
Jeet Kune Do,
which is a fight style invented by Bruce Lee. And it comes because it came through this set of folks who were teaching. Although he doesn't quote it, I think again I read one Chad quote which said, he says there's Japanese jiu-jitsu, some Brazilian jiu-jitsu, standing judo, and tactical three gun. I don't even know what that means as a fight style. Tactical, these are the fight styles used, although there are much longer sets of fight styles used.
There is also drunken boxing, not to be forgotten. Quick question, do you guys remember where you first saw drunken boxing? Goes back to the Matrix. No, goes back to the Matrix. Those words, exactly. Yeah.
So there when he's learning.
I can do jiu-jitsu. Yeah, just before that, you see, drunken boxing is one of the fights that he learned.
It's downloading. Correct,
downloads.
Correct.
Yeah.
The pieces, and this also, by the way, has a little bit of America washing in it, which Chad himself is guilty of, because technically, these are the four that he called out in his interview. This guy is supposed to be Russian. And if you go down the rabbit hole of what all moves are used, apparently there's a Russian fighting form called Sambo. And you see that move actually as the most often done move, where he holds, it looks judo, but it's actually a sambo move. This I only discovered. It has a judoist.
It is the most repeated.
It's most repeated. And he's Russian. And you see it in Parabellum, where as he's walking through those folks are training. And Chad doesn't mention sambo anywhere in any of his interviews. It's a standard thing. I don't know why he doesn't. Well, he's obviously included it for him to be Russian.
In his defense, it's probably something that's so second nature to him, he probably doesn't realize that he needs to call it out, right?
I love the tributes, though, because in the fights, they get the same fellows from the Raid to come and then fight in Raid style with that. They call it that Silat. There's a name for that knife which they've got. They fight that same Silat style. So he does a proper full tribute to the Filipino fighting style. Then he takes the Japanese sword, does a full tribute to the Japanese fighting style.
There are those twins that show up. Twins is which one? They're Hong Kong or Filipino?
They're Filipino. So their style is called Silat or something else. And the knife is called something. That curved knife that they is a Filipino fight. It's in the Raid. In the Raid, they use it all the time. And those guys are both in the Raid. So he has taken a little bit of one of the best. They were in the fight also, I think.
They were in the movie as well, but they're also part of the choreography team.
Those two guys are like, a stuntman who comes in all the Kamal and Rajni movies.
That guy.
Because these two can do things which more or less nobody can do, and they also have facial expressions. So it works well.
So of all the boss fights, there's always somebody that he fights who could beat him or whatever. Of all the boss fights, the only people who don't die are these two.
The outside
is that Keanu said, there's no way I can beat them. I can't kill these guys. Yeah. This is crazy.
Amazing. He leaves a bunch of others alive as well. The guy in the train potentially can live.
Kasyan is one of the fighters who's like, so Kirill, Kasyan, potentially Miss Perkins, because she got a, she was killed, but he got a reprieve. And then the two fighters in the last, and these two twins.
They are the ones.
Are the ones who can actually potentially match him in a fighting sequence.
And they all don't die, and neither does Donnie Yen. So,
well, Perkins gets killed.
Fighter, but she cheated. But she also breaks rules. So.
She broke cheated. Rules, yeah.
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 Since we've been talking about stuntmen, right? We've spoken about Tarantino in the past. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we have also mentioned Bruce Lee. So it's a nice time to invoke that movie. Burt Reynolds and his stunt partner, Hal Needham, were the two characters on which Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood were actually picturized. So they were apparently very close to each other. They literally were, you know, shadows, doubles of each other through their life. To the extent that when Needham got married, and he was the stuntman, Burt Reynolds was the actor. When he got married, it prompted Reynolds to ask, does that mean I'm losing a roommate or gaining a wife? Tarantino apparently later used that relationship to do that movie. My thought though is, if I know Tarantino is going to stop making movies at some point, but it would be so good if he can do a movie on this transition of stunt choreography that Hollywood has gone through. He might not actually be the best director to do a stunt-based movie, but I'm not thinking of this as a stunt movie. I'm thinking this as a backstory of how stunts have changed in Hollywood, right? Which can almost be like a counterpiece to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood Returns.
Yeah.
That would be a good movie for Tarantino to take up. Yeah, and he could get these guys involved. You know, Stahelski and whatnot.
Actually, nice. Chad should do it and they should get Tarantino involved. I think the tale is right.
No.
These guys will know how this thing transitioned in depth because they've lived through transitions, right?
It's not that Tarantino lived through the Sharon Tate era either, right? But he made a great movie out of it. So my point is, this shouldn't be a stunt-driven movie. It should be a movie about stuntmen and the stunt story. So anyway, just a thought.
Nice. I wanted to ask, I know we've called out a bunch of different antagonists and sequences, but any sequence you want to talk about that we haven't brought up so far, anything that you want to call out? Best kill, best stunt, particular sequence that you want
to... You were the one who told me about that. I mean, I watched the sequence viscerally, but you told me about the motorcycle stunt sequence being something which was a tribute to something else which you had seen, right? The way the camera floats. I forget what you had said, but I remember just enjoying the sequence.
It's
obviously one of a kind. And using large samurai swords in that sequence is actually tough, both for the fighter and I presume for the maker also.
Yeah. That is from a movie called The Villainous. But they do a lot of this. And now as I rewatched, I could see things that have attributes to big sequences from other places. The idea of putting guns into places, at least the first time I saw it, keeping guns in positions, what he does in the catacombs before killing...
Vikram, yeah, also inspired by Vikram. Yeah.
Correct. Early 1980s movie, Hard Boiled, and the John Woo movies, of course, all inspired by Vikram, as you correctly pointed out.
Even the assembling of a gun is from Good, Bad and Ugly, by the way. That assembling of the... it's a gun assembled from different parts. It's not actually one gun. The anti-gun he puts together before the fight sequence is from different guns.
Yeah, this putting a gun in each place... there's a long sequence in the opening sequence of The Killer, which is John Woo and Chow Yun-fat, where he's going to assassinate someone and he walks through and he's pretending to be drunk and he's kissing some girl from the bar or whatever. And as he's moving through from his long trench coat, he puts one gun in one flower pot, another gun behind one something else in the hallway. And the entire hallway is lined with guns. So once he finishes the killing, as he comes back, he just keeps picking guns. Not even reloading. It's over. As he's walking back 5 steps, shoots 20 bullets, drops the gun, picks up the next one, and he does that. But these are all great ways to show tribute. And I think it's a good way to look at these things and say, what are all the other action movies that I should watch? So I think it's a plus to showcase these styles. The club scene, for example, for me, whenever I see any club fight sequence, I think of the Collateral club scene.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Which is the best made movie sequence of all time. Because from that music only, there is that collage, which Nikki loves very much. You should link it in the show notes and make it even more popular. There it already is. That's the grounding sequence of the
movie. Yeah. Okay, so specifically, for our listeners, we are talking about one of the greatest YouTube pop culture mashups ever made. It's one long sequence borrowing from, I think, 20 different movies. It's protagonists and antagonists walking through a crowded nightclub. It has scenes from The Terminator, from Collateral, from Matrix, from, I don't know what, 100 other movies, Pulp Fiction, and so on and so forth. And it all looks like one single scene. So we'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah.
So, Dodi, let me ask you, since you're the connoisseur and you know what's happening, why is there no... why is stuntmen not avoided? Why is that category? What is this scene? As I was looking, this one of the things I was thinking about is there only now, because we were doing this, I looked and I actually realized that they don't have any awards for this thing. There is no best stunt, best anything, best movie with stunt. What does it matter?
Yeah. So they have their own awards, but none of the main ones give them. It's for the longest time has been like ghettoized, whatever, right? People are, this is not art or whatever. Now it's obviously art. Yeah. they give this other reason, which I don't think is a good reason, but officially one of the reasons is if you start awarding stunts, you are kind of creating a perverse incentive to continue to do more and more dangerous things just so you can get an award. But I don't agree with that, because anyway, you'll get paid to do a stunt, so you'll get paid to do more dangerous things. So that's just a cop-out. It's really ghettoized kind of approach
is.
Where they're saying it'll be a while before we can do this.
When you say ghettoized, you mean like a set of group think happening, not ghettoized because stunting is ghettoized. So
stunting is ghettoized, where it's like they're seen as lesser than...
It's seen as labor. Yeah, it's seen as...
labor and as not as an art form. It's seen as one more body. Because even casting doesn't have an award, for example. There are certain things that people talk about. Stunts is a great way to actually inject some excitement even into Oscars, for example. It's people have been talking about it for a long time, but it's never come from the Academy. It's a missing link. They should do it.
And because they don't award it, people like stuntman Mike get really troubled and then start doing what they do much later in their lives.
What is this? That's a reference to Death Proof, which I think two people in the world probably got. That and both of them are on this podcast, so listeners.
Hey, stuntman Mike is the most iconic stuntman ever made. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, if you're speaking about showing the transition, that shows a real transition in life.
After Pammal ke Sambandham.
After PKS, yes, I was coming there.
Indeed.
What else?
No, so you asked what are the sequences that stay with you. I can't believe we've been speaking for more than an hour and we've not yet spoken about the knife sequence that opens Parabellum. That entire sequence, starting with the knives and finishing with the horses and the bikes, is just one outstanding adrenaline stretch. So Mithun will remember the first time he watched this movie was with me and our dad. We watched this in 4D. Where our 4DX. Seats were moving.
4DX.
Where our seats were moving. We could smell horse shit and there was air blowing in our face during those during that stunt scene. It was quite something. And it comes right at the start of the film. So we had not been in a 4DX experience before this. So this was our introduction to 4DX for the first and last
time. And in that experience itself, I was actually not in that, because as the seat started shaking, I started feeling nauseous. So I went and sat on the steps and watched the movie from the steps. I, by the way, rewatched, when I watched John Wick 4, Chapter 4, I specifically watched in 4DX, again sitting on the steps, because that was the only way to watch it without cuts.
You're serious?
Well done.
I did, because I actually went and then I rewatched in 3D and knew that there were no cuts in Chapter 4. But Chapter 3 has cuts, especially the knife sequence. Literally, the last most satisfying kill with the on the iris is something which they cut out. Like when I watched it in 3D later, I want to like poke myself in the eye with a pencil.
There is more to it than meets the eye, as they say, when you watch it in 4DX.
Pencil also, they call back to from the first
time.
The second movie starts with Peter Stormare saying there was one time when killed with a pencil. I've heard this story.
Yeah, but I actually thought there'll be a flashback. I thought there'll be a flashback to the old story, but instead there is a new pencil sequence which is done beautifully.
No, even smaller sequences are memorable, right? The fight in Parabellum, even before you get to the knife fight, his opening fight with the NBA player, that tall guy. I'm forgetting his name. The opening fight in the library with the books. I mean, the use of that book. I mean, that so you can never unsee that scene where he's killed with that book in his mouth and his head twisted off with it.
It's
beautifully choreographed.
It is, but when Kamal Haasan uses pencils and a MacBook to kill the villains in Vikram, you didn't say anything. Chumma, this Hollywood pandering is happening one more time.
How does he survive the fall at the end of Parabellum? There are some things that are even by defiance.
That is what is. Hey, come on. That so fall was nothing. He falls on a dumpster. He falls on a sunshade. You know, he cushions. He falls. It's not the worst fall I've seen. I didn't
expect that fall is also a Buster Keaton thing, which many people have repeated. But this thing about bouncing off 1, 2, 3, 4 and falling was first stunted by Buster Keaton.
I'm amazed that you're worried that he survived a fall. He gets shot like some 50 times and stabbed 100 times in every single organ. And it's not like he gets time to convalesce. He gets up and he's killing 100 people 5 minutes later. So,
speaking about time then, how long, what is the time that has elapsed in the Wickverse from the...
What's it like?
Roughly. Or tell movie by movie if you want.
First one is like 2 months, a month max. John Wick 1 is like a month. He starts, the dog is killed, he goes, kills everybody, he comes back.
I think that all happens over 3 days, I think.
Yeah, it's 3 days.
So less than a month, I'm saying. Some small number.
Yeah, it's also less than 5 years, by the way. Yeah,
sure. Second one?
Second one is, again, probably a couple of days.
And it's also continuous to these.
Yeah, it's continuous. Yeah, and number three really picks up exactly where.
So number three is also continuous. The full Vicverse is only 2 weeks done.
Probably.
But between three and four, he has convalescence, right? He recovers from that sitting in the Bowery King. What we are seeing in the beginning of four.
Except we don't know for how long. Except we don't know for how long. But yeah.
Chad says it's, you can assume that between three and four, some 3-4 months have passed. But again, four itself takes over. Like each of the movies only happens.
Four is again a couple of days. Yeah.
1, 2, 3 are continuous. Between three and four, there's a few months of convalescence.
It's part of what makes that movie tension work also, no? Because you're actually going and going towards the thing. There's very intent, and it's very, it's both intent focused and sort of in momentum. Every stunt is happening A to B to C. You don't have time to.
No time to recover is part of the storytelling that's happening there.
It doesn't include the Mission Impossible scenes. It's like, now we're going to India. It just happens.
At the aerial shot, of landing.
Which, by the way, when he travels quite a bit in three and four, which I don't know how they factored it, all of that flight to Morocco and back and all that. US to Morocco is a whole day going and coming back to 24 hours. There's a whole day of no action in the middle of 3 days of action.
So let's ask the other question. Lithi, you said you were unhappy. I said I was happy. Are you happy with the ending of John Wick Chapter 4?
I am never unhappy with the endings of any movie, to be honest. It's not about the ending.
It's a very global statement that has
Moonram Pirai. I saw you crying on that day.
Oh, wait, you're by unhappy, do you mean unsatisfied or do you mean moved?
No, you were sad that it happened that way.
I was, I didn't expect him to die because he's come across as someone who doesn't die. I mean, it's a fair assumption. And the way he dies at the end is it's basically one shot to the to the liver or something. He survived those, several of those through the four movies. Yeah. So it's a little surprising that he dies or that there is a grave for him. I don't know if he's died. I know there is going to be a fifth chapter, which I suspect might be a prequel because I think he is dead as far as the story is concerned, but I really don't know. I didn't expect him to die.
I feel like you want to bring some closing to the story because it's also been about, which is why this guy, Winston, has always had that almost in every movie. I think he's the one who comes back and refers to the wife. Do you want to be known as an assassin or as a loving husband? He's the one who says, what about Helen? And this has started all as a story of grief anyway. So at some point there should be some closure on that. And I mean, to the end that once you've done all the action you want to do. So
I have one thought on that. Okay. I know John Wick is now, the John Wick franchise now has become this movement, this revolutionary thing that has happened over the last few years.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody had any idea that this is where it was going when that first movie was made.
Yes.
And that first movie really... I don't think the tone or the mood of the first movie, I'm not criticizing that film. It doesn't really fit in with 2, 3 and 4. Like where Chad Stahelski has taken it from that first movie is very, very far. And yes, he does keep referring back to the backstory. But beyond a point, the dog also. I mean, there's another dog and there is no dog. And then there are these two references to Helen. But it's
true.
I don't think the movie tries too hard to close loops is what
I mean. Yeah, no, it's not.
It's a difference. So I think in the first movie, I agree with you. When first was written, they didn't know how big it will be. Now, if you have to still stay true, you have to still give the credit to what the first was. Dog and Helen have to be part of it. And I actually think it's not closing doors. That's my whole view. I actually think it opens because now John Wick, I mean, Keanu himself can play any in a prequel. He can play whatever level of depth you want him to play.
Yeah.
Right. So you can actually have 15 other stories and the universe can expand. Yeah. Otherwise, if he is 80% of the movie, there is, you have to have Helen. You have to have a dog. You have to have some level to say he has to follow the rule. Yes, say about 5 times. So, you know, that has to be done. And hence, you actually are opening more doors.
What I was trying to say was, Chad Stahelski and chapters 2, 3 and 4, of course, pay homage and go back to part 1. But they've also taken the movie very, very far. I mean, let's say that 2, 3 and 4 are very different films. They are obviously, they know where they've come from. But I mean, beyond a point, it really doesn't matter.
Like, but it's a good way to end is my point. Probably. To at least bring some kind of closure to us. Which, by the way, when the movie came out, in theory, it was over only. And then they announced a little later. So, we don't know if they were planning, not planning. But to Mithun's point, I think the idea of expanding the universe is the bit that's more interesting. Like, even Continental that's coming out is set in the 70s. It's the birth of the Continental and the birth of these rules. It's a TV show.
But are any of these guys involved?
I guess the main guys are involved. But none of the cast will be there.
Leech and Stahelski are involved?
Yeah, I don't know if they're making or whatever, but they will set the storyline and go off. So we don't know. They've done the trailer. I don't think there's a lot more detail. Maybe directed first episode or something. I have also not seen. But they're also doing Ballerina, which is what I thought would happen here. I thought Ballerina would go past. So there's Ballerina, which is Ana de Armas, is also an assassin set in the thing world, in the John Wick universe.
Oh, it's a completely sideways coming in. I had no idea.
Yeah, So there's Ballerina, which they've been shooting, and Ana de Armas is doing action and all that there. I thought she would appear here because they have to give some linkage, which means potentially Ballerina will have to have some Keanu Reeves in it. So it's either a flashback and he's the one who's trained her or whatever, or in this between 3 and 4, they pass through somewhere.
My point of view, I would love to see whatever these guys are up to next, right? In this universe, outside this universe. I don't really care too much for more John Wick movies that don't have Keanu Reeves central to them, because I think he's central to the franchise. And having Keanu Reeves have 80% of the screen time doing exactly what he does is what really makes this franchise for me. So, yeah, I'm not very interested in seeing where this franchise per se moves after Keanu stops being a part of it. That said, who knows? It might take its own life and be very exciting after that too. I can't believe we've spoken for this long without talking about Ian McShane, about...
Yes, I was going to talk about Ian McShane.
and about Morpheus, and about Lance Reddick and whatnot. Yeah,
let's do a quick round of people who have been crucial to the franchise. First of all, seeing him and Morpheus together after The Matrix, I think that's a great coming back together of stalwarts of big action movies and who have defined... Yeah. Action movies, at least for the last 20 years.
42 regular, wasn't it? It's Kevlar front to back, the latest in ballistic chic. Appropriate for all formal occasions, weddings, funerals, high table duels. After all, a man has to look his best when it's time to get married. Or buried.
And yet again, playing a similar sort of where one is completely over the top and one is completely understated. They've all been playing that also.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, a neat inversion, because Morpheus searches for Neo throughout The Matrix, but here it's the other way around.
Nice. And yeah, full theatricality here from this guy. All this, I am the king.
Chewing
it's
the scenery.
It's the only role built to be that way. Yeah. So it's actually written to be over the top. So he plays it that way too.
And he's built to play that role. I mean, that's pretty much all that Lawrence Fishburne can do at this point.
So there you have that. You have Ian McShane throughout all of the movies with his diction, with him being the guy who constantly says, of course, other people will say it, but him always saying Jonathan instead of John.
Jonathan, yes.
Yes, Jonathan.
Two rules that cannot be broken, Jonathan. No blood on continental grounds and every marker must be honored.
Mithun, you haven't watched Deadwood. You haven't seen this guy.
Al Swearengen.
Yeah, to see Swearengen back. Good fun.
Okay.
Then a couple of... And I had forgotten when only in this rewatch I realized that the other assassin who's hanging around in Continental in the first movie is Lester Freeman. So there's clearly some fan. That's Lester Freeman. I had forgotten about it.
Dies a quick death, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's unfortunately a quick death.
Yeah.
But he also very coolly, he's standing in that doorway. In vest and boxer shorts. And he's just holding a gun on his hip. Yeah. He's just tapping the gun on his hip and leaning by the door.
Yeah.
John, are you working? He's like, no, just said whatever. That brings us to, I think, the sad news to come out of here, which is
Lance Reddick. Yeah.
Lance Reddick passing away. But I guess the movie
Was this his final bow? I mean, is there any other Lance Reddick content out there?
That's a good question. I originally would have thought he had something in Continental, but now that they've set it in the 70s, which was not revealed until recently, he's not there for sure. I don't know if there's anything else, but this was a fitting goodbye.
It was
a little difficult to watch.
Mr. Wick is on his way to see you, sir. Do you board? I'm sorry to say so, but this facility does not. I, however, would be willing to accept the responsibility, should you wish.
Appreciate that.
Does he have a name, sir?
No.
Good dog. Stay.
John Wick 3 is last, where finally there's actually somebody who actually he's getting to fight, and he's getting to fight as an equal to John Wick. Yeah. What a sequel. I mean, they couldn't have planned a better flavor.
It
In fact,
was
there's that
brilliant,
scene where this guy comes in and says, "We need more guns. What is this? Like, you've left me with like nothing." And that shadow calmly comes in, takes out the thing, starts loading. He's like, "I know where everything is. Like, stop talking to boss man. Let me get you to execution." It was
Death
a little
Force.
jarring to watch him die on screen, knowing that he has just died. So that bit was jarring, but at least they give tribute again and again. It happens 2-3 times, right? They stand in front of the gravestone, and then later again, somebody calls out to him or something. It's there's at least.
I don't know. I don't know if all of that was shot before he died or not. I do. I did read somewhere that they were planning to have, you know, some kind of a call out saying in tribute to Lance Reddick, but
so
apparently the prince had already gone.
Prince
out.
Had already left, so that they're going to put
in the
streaming
OTT
version. But at least getting to stand in front of that gravestones where all the names are written, and he's standing in front of this. So those were good. And he, I think I sent you some clips. So we've all known him as The Wire and a very serious actor or whatever. But he's like hilariously funny. We can plug a couple of clips later. He did these shorts on, I think it was Funny or Die. I'm not sure. Called the corporation. And he's this guy who runs a corporation, but extremely profane and just doing like
he's
crazy.
He's hilariously funny in John Wick, man.
Yeah, also.
I mean,
yes.
That in John Wick, every line is like, most of the lines are comedy, actually.
Yeah.
Literally,
Mr. Week.
Of his lines are comedy.
Mr. Week.
Because he's saying the obvious with such a bite that most of his lines
gravitas.
Are actually comical.
Yeah, a lot of gravitas,
Matrix versus Vic. And I mean, obviously, both are part of Keanu's legacy. But what, in your opinion, is the bigger contributor to his legacy or whatever? If you had to pick
Vic,
one over the other.
Vic is the better action movie franchise. Matrix is the better movie franchise of the two. I have no doubts about that.
I actually disagree. I think Matrix is probably the better action movie franchise too. It's just a much larger action movie franchise because it takes action and makes it, it links it to everything else. And it's probably the most connected of, and the quality of the action. Again, you have to.
Yeah, it's not.
You have to handicap for timing also, right? You have to handicap for when.
True.
I mean, if you do adjust it for, then Matrix is far superior.
I'd broadly agree with you. I think Matrix 1 really hits it out of the park, right? And on every front that you mentioned. Matrix 2 tries very hard to match up to what Matrix 1 did. But the rough edges show, even in that Neo versus 100 Smiths action sequence, which is the most popular one. In fact, there are a bunch of videos now, you know, showing everywhere all the rough edges in that scene. And I think the rest of the movie, apart from the chase, really struggles to hold up. Let's not talk about part 3, because it really was a terrible film. Part 4 was a wonderful movie, which, by the way, came out not too long back.
Yeah.
It's a complete send it from the Wachowskis. And I think at some stage we should maybe talk about that movie, because they were literally forced by Warner Brothers to make a fourth addition to The Matrix, which they did not want to. And they, of course, had gone through their entire journey as human beings. Their worldview was completely different by now. And part 4 is apparently a fuck you to to the incels who claim to know what... who claim to know what the red pill and the blue pill. Oh, yeah, you absolutely should. And so there is this famous Twitter thread involving Elon Musk and one of the Wachowskis.
Fuck you, Ed. Fuck you, too.
Yeah. Where I think Elon Musk
it's
uses
the
red pill, blue pill analogy wrongly. And their whole point is that none of you get what really we were trying to do. So fuck off. So yeah, I think Matrix went all over the place. I really loved part 4, by the way. It's a very different movie. It's a very beautiful movie, must say. It bombed big time. But it's really worth watching, especially if you've lived with 1, 2, and 3. But all of that said, if you just look at the consistency of staying true to what the storyline is, and just in terms of using the best of what is available at the time and the action sequences, everything, I'd say John Wick is the better action franchise for me. But you definitely have to watch.
Goes the other way.
Yeah, you have to watch part 4 before you can make a comment on Matrix. By the way, so
your
hypothesis is completely rejected.
No, but 2 and 3, the problem with Matrix was 2 and 3, they did it like pretty much back to back.
Which is exactly what Chad Stahelski does not do.
And they did it within 18 months of the first Matrix coming out. So they like
it was a cash grab.
Speaking specifically to that scene, it was the first time the 100 Smiths scene. That was a new software that was being used for the first time, and obviously it struggled and whatever else. So it is very badly done.
Kamalasan had not yet tried.
On that note, where else have we seen that in Indian cinema? Back then, around the same time that Matrix 2 and 3 came out.
Matrix 2 and 3?
One of Mithun's favorite actors was involved. In fact, this is his debut.
Oh, this I was going to say something in Endiran, which also.
Before Endiran, boys. There is that song where you have the camera going around Siddharth and Janelia and doing the stop motion stuff and everything.
Favorite actor within quotes.
For me, it comes down to Matrix, I feel, just because of the... And again, we are too close to the wick right now. We have to probably reevaluate in 10 years whether we remember it purely as a stunt action franchise or whether there's more legacy or impact. It depends how you measure it, what I enjoyed versus what it left behind. Matrix changed the way movies were made. So there is something that Matrix has done that
Matrix
very few movies have done.
Also changed the way people talk, right? So the kind of influence it had on the world is immense, right? I don't think John Wick is going to match it. You don't have to wait 10 years. I'll tell you how.
Because Vic is a more cleaner state storyline, which does not have much more outside of that space to talk about. It depends on what parameter you want to put. But yeah, I thought that would be interesting to talk about. Again, Keanu has been part of on and off many different things. Even Speed is...
Speed as a standalone action movie is also a defining movie.
It's a defining movie. It's among the the top things that I would very easily watch again. Like if you would give me a choice of between Die Hard and Terminator 2 and Speed, they're all up there with me. I would find it difficult to...
Speed was first movie in Dolby Surround stereo system.
Was that? Wasn't it Kuruthi Punnal?
No, Speed was...
So that was the first Indian film. In Devi Paradise. Yes, absolutely.
He's managed to go quiet and reinvent himself and come back, multiple times.
I mean, what he did in John Wick is a risk, right? He put that out. I mean, hence it picked up. I mean, you could say it's a risk. Because John Wick 1 is a bit of a grinder pickup. It's not very clear it'll be a hit, right, as it starts.
And it's clearly cheaper than the others. They've spent lesser money. But they had lesser money and it's fine. You didn't know
what I don't think he knew what he was going into. It was just another movie for him at that stage. But what he's done after that, I think, one of the most interesting people in Hollywood to follow.
And he gets a knock for being wooden or being whatever. But I think it's a strength. He plays to his strengths in those ways. Neo is supposed to be a blank slate. Even here, John Wick also, he plays it so underplayed, like you said, Vithut. It's understated. Like, it's easy to make fun of the...
By the way, different count. You went on body count. I don't have the exact numbers, so unfortunately, I haven't researched it. But I'm willing to bet his word count has reduced from movie one. The last movie word count is killer low. And in that, about half the words is...
That's a very deliberate thing. Chelsky has spoken A, that the word count has gone down, but B, he's also spoken about Keanu coming to the script and saying, take out stuff.
Yeah.
He knows what
the acts are. Let the action stand out.
So apparently the death of the dog in the first one, where the dog is crawling next to him and he's sitting there and holding the dog in his lap, the dead dog, that had some dialogue. He was going to be talking to the dog. And Keanu's like, what else do you need? There's like, my wife is dead and there's a dead dog in my lap. Like, what can I say that is more powerful than what you can see? Why are you making me say things that are highly obvious also?
Yeah.
And I can't say any more than this. So let's not, let me just have me looking at the dog. That's enough.
When he puts line on the full line, do you want a war or do you just want to have me? Once in a way, you'll do what full line. Otherwise, absolute spare. Yeah.
There are also these videos of Keanu Reeves being seen in metro trains, as a regular guy wearing, like torn clothes. Not torn clothes, but like extremely cheap clothes, comfortably, offering a seat to an older person, etc.
He's a nice guy, but you should admit everyone does manage what they manage from, the image that's put out. But he's a decent guy also.
He's a very decent guy, leads a very Buddhist way of life. Yeah. Not that that makes him better than anybody else, Mithun, before you jump on me. I'm just saying it's very nice.
He's got one.
Macfed and Madri.
So that was our review of John Wick Chapter 4. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about not just the latest movie, but the retrospective on the Wickverse, as well as Keanu himself as an action icon of the last, almost 30 plus years, I guess.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think let's take a leaf out of Keanu's book and not say much more. Let his role speak for themselves. And we look forward to getting your comments on these episodes. Please write, review, rate and our podcast on all of your podcast apps of choice. Please send us emails at yointermission@gmail.com or you can tweet at us at yointermission on Twitter.
Yeah, and most importantly, tell your friends about this podcast. What we need most at this stage is for more people to listen to us. It's great fun. As you can see, we are having a wonderful time talking amongst ourselves, and hopefully you will enjoy listening to it as much as we do putting it together.
Great.
Okay. Any closing thoughts, Mithun?
No. Send everyone our way. Whoever comes, whoever it is, tell them I'll kill them all.
But perfect no end. On continental grounds. Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. See you.